top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies podcast, a celebration of genre cinema.
Present from the people who brought you Friday the 13th. Now comes Don't Open Till Christmas.
A homicidal maniac is loose at Christmas. His target is Santa Claus. No one dressed as Santa Claus is safe. His death toys are a spear, a gun, an open razor, a dagger, or a garrote. Execution by any means. Don't open till Christmas. Some Santa Clauses ignore the warnings. He surely wouldn't attack a woman. Don't Open Till Christmas with special guest star Carolyn Monroe.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 439 of the Really Awful Movies podcast. Don't Open Till Christmas. Now, when it comes to holidays, far outpacing all other holidays is Christmas when it comes to related themed horror fare. So, I mean, the list is seemingly endless and growing by the day, and we certainly don't need another Christmas slasher under the tree this year or next or for the foreseeable future. But you got a bunch of films from the ridiculous to the sublime. In the latter camp, you have something like John Waters' favorite holiday horror, which is Christmas Evil. And then you get something like a Christmas Bloody Christmas with an animatronic Santa that I quite like, actually, that's quite good of its type. And of course, you're going to have to throw in the OG, Bob Clark's Black Christmas, which is lensed in Midtown Toronto and introduced us to that classic POV setup, carrying on the Mario Bava Bay of Blood tradition of basically laying the framework for and the groundwork for and the boilerplate for what we typically think of as a modern day slasher. When it comes to the ridiculous, you have, well, loads of those. Silent Night, Bloody Night, Santa's Sleigh featuring the WWE grappler Bill Goldberg and Jimmy Caan of all people, like Sonny Corleone, really? That was really bad. There's sort of unremarkable Silent Night, Bloody Night. There's just a whole slew of these things, and it really does run the gamut from the good to the bad. I quite liked You Better Watch Out. I thought that was super fun. And people have good things to say about Violent Night. I can't even recall if I even saw that one. But there's a lot of holiday horrors far outpacing the likes of like a Murder Party or Haunt or Halloween, of course, that is geared toward the Halloween season, or of course Blood Rage and Thanksgiving, the latest Eli Roth movie, obviously geared around the holiday of the same name, at least in the US, where it's several weeks apart from that in Canada. Anyway, what's unique about Don't Open Till Christmas is both the setting, but also the fact that in this case, it's not Santa Kris Kringle's that are actually doing the slashing, but they're actually on the receiving end of the, I guess, determinations of naughty and niceness by the judge, jury, and executioner here. And this is a bit of a procedural here. This is a bit of an odd duck and a bit of a very, very unique beast amidst the slate of holiday Christmas offerings that seem to have proliferated like crazy in the last several years, at least, particularly on Shudder and that whatnot. Speaking of Bob Clark and the Black Christmas, we're introduced to a guy in a Santa suit and his paramour who meet in an alleyway to do what people usually do in an alleyway in a parked vehicle. And soon you get a John Woo-esque woozy bob and weave camera looping around the vehicle, and the two are dispatched in unceremonious fashion and very unremarkable, rather dull fashion by Blade. and they're basically gutted. And it kind of belies the practical effects that were introduced to later in the film to have this very, very sort of tepid setup in a film that delivers the goods both on a sleaze and gore level far more readily later in the picture. And these discrepancies should probably be ascribed to the fact that while this is directed by Edmund Purdom, a guy who cut his bones at the foot of at the feet of Joseph D'Amato and Ruggero Deodato in the Italian scene, I think directorial duties were passed along to co-writer Derek Ford and perhaps to someone else as well, because this one was a film that was plagued with production film production problems, as is befitting anything that takes 3 years to create, because it was finally released in the mid-80s after being after the production got going in, I believe, the early 80s and maybe 1981. And as we've seen with the likes of A Dangerous Man, which took a dozen years to lens, and that was featured in our book, Mine's Bigger Than Yours, 100 Wackiest Action Movies, having a film shot over 12 years does not lend itself well to continuity, to say the least. Boyhood, this ain't the Linklater film that was lensed over all those years to great effect. In this one, you actually have procedural elements married with some sex farce and exploitation elements as well, and you have a la Chekhov and the gun that's introduced in early act to be used later. Keen-eyed viewers will notice a package that's delivered to one of the Scotland Yard detectives that says, "Don't open till Christmas," and that's actually put away by the detective's maid in his flat. So it's something you can keep in mind that presents itself later in spectacular fashion as well. So what you have post murder of this loving duo in the alleyway, you have a gay dance party in what looks like the West End Theater District of London, or perhaps Soho, and you have a Santa Claus who gets a spear chucked right through his noggin and dies in front of his daughter Kate. So, and then Kate becomes the main principal in whom we're meant to invest, and her boyfriend as well, whose name is Cliff. And Cliff finds himself at the center of the investigation because he's always seemingly around when a victim, washes up. So in that way, Don't Open Till Christmas almost operates as a quasi-giallo film in that respect. It's kind of wild. And you have this twosome who now are the subject of an investigation, despite the fact that it's Kate's father who was murdered at the dance party, and while Cliff was there, and while she was there, and while they watched, and which was also watched by 100 partygoers at this nightclub. So it seems odd for Scotland Yard detectives to be so fixated on the likes of Cliff, even when he is placed at the scene of one of the killings. It just makes no sense, but it's one of the many things that is senseless in this film, in addition to the violence. New Scotland Yard detectives are on the case, and as speaks to the continuity errors that were prevalent during the production of this film, which incidentally got a Vinegar Syndrome release on Blu-ray last year, much to my absolute delight. And as an aside too, Vinegar Syndrome opened a brick and mortar store in Toronto, so a shout out to them for all the physical media heads in the audience who happen to live in Toronto. It's in the West End, speaking of the West End, but It's pretty super cool that they always reference this cube that says New Scotland Yard, which turns and is in front of this brutalist building in London. And it's like, okay, we don't need to see New Scotland Yard pictured like 3 and 4 times. But it just adds one of the many hilarious moments in this film, which is a very, very kind of haphazard and very episodic, as befits a film that's being pulled in multiple directions stylistically, aesthetically, and narratively. Like, it there's people in whom you're meant to invest, but also the preponderance and the bulk of the victims are just like the equivalent of the mall Santa over here. They're just people dressed as Kris Kringle who happen to meet their maker in one spectacular fashion. Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose. There's a Santa whose face is shoved onto the grill when he's roasting chestnuts on an open fire. And lovers of London will get a great delight in this one, Don't Open Till Christmas, because, there's a horror release called Last Night in Soho, which was quite brilliant, but there's also shots of the West End, the Theatre District, and kind of tacky but nonetheless entertaining Piccadilly Circus, where my co-author Jeff quickly lost, I don't know if it was 100 or 200 pounds in a casino, and much to his chagrin. Anyway, this is a film that's all over the map, and you have Alan Lake, who portrays I can't recall if it's a Telegraph or Guardian reporter, or at least he claims that he's a reporter. And as befits a plague production like this, Lake actually committed suicide shortly after this one was released. So this one was just replete with problems and just replete with difficulties from the get-go. And so what you have is, with reference to journalism too, The Guardian is derisively referred to as the Graniad because of all the typos. So that's an anagram of Guardian, which is hilarious too. So what you have is this supposed purported journalist who's supposed to be investigating and querying and pressing Scotland Yard for details about this spate of murders that's happening in London's West End. And he inserts himself into the conversation, which adds, again, to the giallo-like aspects of this film. But again, in a film that doesn't know which end is up, and I'm reminded of this famous quote attributed to the Roman statesman Seneca, if you don't know to which port one is sailing, no wind is favorable. So you have all these different Kris Kringles just ending up dead, sometimes in spectacular fashion, like when one's appendage is gutted by a urinal, or a urinal, as they would say in Britain. But you also have a peep show in Soho where one of the Johns, if you want to call it that, one of the denizens of these dens of iniquity is knifed in front of the quote-unquote dancers. And that's one of the neat aspects of this too. One of the strippers recounts her encounter with the killer and says that his eyes sparkle. And there's a couple of references to the sparkling eyes of the killer, whose visage is being obscured by a mask that's not unlike the one used by the perp in Happy Death Day. Not unlike that one, or a little bit like perhaps Profondo Rosso, a little bit of that kind of style of a porcelain kind of mask. So you have all these things happening, and you have Cliff and Kate, who are being questioned despite not being involved whatsoever. They're finally cleared, and again, lovers of London will like the different references to the different particular neighborhoods that you get to see. And you get to see Christopher Wren's St. Paul's Cathedral in one instance, and there's a couple markets, and one of which may be, I think, near Covent Garden. So lots of really neat stuff, big maps of the Thames and the different regions of London, which warmed my heart. So many fun aspects to this film, which is wholeheartedly very, very goofy. And there's elaborate kind of time-wasting set pieces that, even in a film that runs at the not exactly lengthy Godfather-esque 86 minutes, there's this protracted scene where a Santa absconds and runs away from a group of menacing 80s punks, and he runs into the London Dungeon, which is a tourist trap on the south of the Thames, which recreates different historical events and is kind of one of these gallows attractions, not unlike maybe the Voodoo Museum in New Orleans, or one of these things that attracts a certain type of tourist who's into the more morbid. I would count myself among those. Now, genre heads will take note as we get into what we learned here that Santa is chased into a theater for no reason other than to get a protracted scene of genre icon Caroline Munro performing. And it's like, for what exactly? I'm not entirely sure. But you get this scene where she's just singing and fronting this band, and it goes on for what seems to be 10 minutes, all the while the victim's body is brought to the stage via a trap door. And you almost like have this operatic feel, almost like a popcorn or opera. And as again, I mentioned to the the urinal killing featuring a Kris Kringle castrated in a department store bathroom. So all these wild aspects of things, and again, this hulking figure almost resembles Howard Stern crossed with Gene Simmons, who's purportedly a journalist and asking very pressing questions about the investigation and trying to insert himself into the proceedings with very little effect. But I mean, we're learning a lot of things here, but I really thought this was just wild. There's, I think, a couple of the principals here, I forget, one of whom is in Pieces, and the other one is in, I believe, Slaughter High. So you get, like, genre heads will enjoy familiar faces in addition to, obviously, Carolyn Monroe. I mean, you can't go wrong, even if she's just going to front a band and sing. I mean, Captain Kronos, Vampire Hunter. I mean, it's friggin' Carolyn Monroe, right? Like, Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde, bunch of Hammer productions, lots of things, and in addition, I think she was in some James Bond vehicle, speaking of British films, and some Jess Franco stuff, and, well, Bill Lustig's Maniac, as an aside, one of my favorite all-time slashers, and when I met Bill at Toronto's Horrorama, I was able to tell him as much, and say how much Maniac had an impact on me. So, yeah, super cool to see various genre icons in a film that has very little to be said about it otherwise, and a hodgepodge of exploitation, sex farce, and police procedural that includes, inexplicably, a friend of Cliff, one of the early suspects and red herrings in the film, who is also a pervert photographer who tries to enlist Kate and Cliff to take part in a nude photography exhibit that he's doing, which is really weird, as you wouldn't exactly press someone whose father had just been murdered to take part in such a lascivious undertaking. So one of the many, many weird aspects of Don't Open Till Christmas, just a crazy, batshit, bonkers movie that has quickly become one of my favorites in the holiday genre, and which shockingly got distribution through 21st Century Film Corporation. Like, you'd think something this sort of eccentric and haphazard and wacky would have just been jettisoned to the wayside and maybe relegated to the likes of the Deuce and 42nd Street and the drive-in pervert segment in New York City. But this one actually drew a little more attention more broadly, as I said. Thank you guys at Vinegar Syndrome for a choice Blu-ray that I hope is under my tree this year. And just a super fun, wacky, just batshit bonkers movie that is just so wild and over the top and so tonally off in so many ways, and yet so kind of heartfelt and endearing, and featuring a couple of strong performances and some pretty cool gallows humor from the likes of the folks at Scotland Yard. So I think you had lots of varying elements that make this one, I think, a potential holiday favorite as we approach Christmas. It really is unique. And if I'm going to see, like, yet another Santa slasher, like a Violent Night or one of these countless, you know, Christmas Bloody Christmas type movies, I'm more in keeping and inclined to check out something really, really bonkers from the 80s that has among its unique properties the fact that it's lensed across the pond, but also the fact that Kris Kringle is, again, the victim and not the perp, and the fact that they try and introduce, even if it's in not exactly compelling fashion, different red herrings, different types of plot twists, and a different type of procedural and a different type of movie than the standard Santa slasher. Hope you continue to enjoy the podcast, a bit of a shorter one here. I'm going to give this one for pure Christmas seasonal holiday entertainment value as you try and shelter yourself from Mariah Carey-related warbling in malls this holiday season. I'm going to give this a 4 out of 5 for pure entertainment as a standalone quality piece of cinema, obviously a 2.25, but you could maybe split the difference. I love this, and this is going to become annual holiday viewing for me as I continually revisit the likes of the, again, the OG Black Christmas. Really like Better Watch Out. I thought that was really solid too. Really, really like Christmas, Bloody Christmas. And of course, Christmas Evil, which is, again, one of my top two in the genre. And obviously on the sillier side of things, Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2, and that one is just so ridiculous and over the top. And but there's many things you can watch over this Christmas season, you know, like a Gremlins or whatnot, or in the action space, something like an Invasion USA, or of course, yes, Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. Talk to you soon. Stay safe. Get that Christmas shopping done, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care. Thank you.